Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up the deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Live in downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Poker Room, I am Paul Harris with St. Louis's poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips. And before we get into anything else, congratulations to our friends here at Lumiere in the poker room, which is now the biggest money-making poker room in the St. Louis area.
It has grown by leaps and bounds in the last few months, and people like Tony Russo, the guy that we got his promotion down here and everything, needed some kudos to that, a little slap on the back.
Absolutely.
Did a very good job.
They run a terrific room. All the tables always busy, and considering that some of the other rooms are a little bit bigger, for these guys to be bringing in more dollars says a lot about their customer service and the way they run this place, so congratulations to them.
Yeah, doing more with less. Nothing wrong with that.
Now, here we are on day one of the World Series of Poker. Today was the casino employees event. Tomorrow will be the beginning of the regular events that go on, and on Thursday, of course, the first big event you're playing in. So yep. When are you flying out?
Tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock, I will be in the airport, hopefully on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And I go out there for the 40K. $40,000 buy-in tournament.
That's on Thursday.
That is on Thursday. Noon on Thursday.
But you're doing stuff before then.
Well, I wasn't, but yes, I am. It seems like I can't keep my plate clean on this thing.
If I know you, you land at like 9:30 tomorrow morning in Las Vegas, and by 10 o'clock you have to be somewhere.
Oh, not quite that bad. They are going to allow me to go and get unpacked and everything like that. 1 o'clock it starts. So I got a couple hours.
What are you doing tomorrow?
I've got a photo shoot. I've got an interview. And then it gets interesting.
Yeah?
Because we've had a challenge thrown our way. We're going to be filming a little section. I'm going to be out there with Joe Hashem and Greg Raymer, Chris Moneymaker, and we're going to challenge a guy who thinks he knows how to throw a ball. A guy by the name of Oral Hershiser.
Oh, man.
He's going to be pitching to us. We're going to be swinging.
Now, I should say Oral has a reputation now in the poker community. In fact, I think technically he's a friend of Poker
Stars.
Yes,
he is. Yes,
he's
he
got,
is.
Which means that he wears their patch just like you do as a member of Team Poker
yep.
Stars Pro. And I've actually played against Oral in the 10-20 game at Bellagio a few years ago, and I'm here to tell you, this guy's a good poker player. I stayed away from him as much as I could. You're going to actually face him? In what? Throwing hardball?
What? It's not going to quite be hardball. There is a little bit of a change to it.
Now, remember the last time you took on a sporting event, Dennis, was last summer after you came back from qualifying for the November 9, you were asked to come and throw the opening pitch at Busch Stadium.
And I split the plate with it. What's the problem?
You split the plate on about the 11th bounce. You barely got it off the mound.
Well, Oral is doing it, and he's kind of issued us a little bit of a challenge. He doesn't think that any of us, there's six of us, will be able to even foul a ball off.
Is he throwing a baseball?
He's throwing a wiffle ball.
A wiffle ball. Wow.
But he says what's so great about that is he can make the thing dance like a little floater on a line or something out there. He says this thing will weave and bob and dance all over the place. You don't stand a chance.
Are you using a regular, one of those thin yellow wiffle ball bats?
Now don't tell Oral this, but see, we have the regular bats.
Yeah.
And we're going to start out with that one. Then they're bringing out the Fred Flintstone version of that bat. This thing's a monstrous thing.
Like a giant turkey leg?
Pretty much bigger.
Yeah.
In other words, if you hold it over the plate, you have the entire plate covered.
Okay.
So, you know.
You're hitting with a 2x4.
Oh, bigger. It's going to be fun. Look, I mean, he's a great athlete. If he was throwing a hard ball, we might as well not even stand up there. There's not a chance of us even getting a bat around in time to meet it.
Right.
But with a wiffle ball, with it that way, we're going to have some fun. We're going to have some prop bets, I bet, between it, see who can foul one off. In fact, there you go. Avad Khan, Greg Raymer, Chris Moneymaker, Joe Hashem, me, and Vanessa Russo.
Okay.
Who's going to foul the first one off?
Who's going to foul the first one off, or who's going to connect the most?
Oh, who's going to connect the most? We'll do it that way.
Well, first of all, I'm putting the over-under at you connecting at 1.5, which means I'm giving you credit for getting the bat on at least one.
Okay. Well,
two would be the over, and I'm not 100% sure about that, so I'm going to set it at 1.5
right, well,
for you.
You have more confidence in me than Oral.
Well, no, I think that Oral's going to get to you, but I think there's always the luck possibility. You know, it's like aces against deuces.
There you go.
The deuce could come. And who is it again? It's you and Javad Khan. He won't get around on one. Raymer. I don't see Raymer getting around on one. Vanessa. You know, if she wears the right outfit, she could throw Oral off quite a bit.
Let me tell you, she does the skydiving, she does everything else. She's a very, very good athlete.
She is a very good athlete.
I think she's got as much of a chance as any of us.
I do, too. What about Hashem?
I think Vanessa's got a good chance of hitting one.
So in the prop bet, you're going to put your money on Vanessa Russo.
Yes,
here.
I would. I think.
You know what?
Chris Moneymaker's a good athlete, too, believe it or not.
I'm going to put my money on Vanessa Russo.
Well, I am, too, probably.
All right, so you're doing that tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock. And then what else are you doing?
Then we're having some fun. Annie Duke is having a charity event. It's going to be for Refuge International.
And
ready for this title?
Yeah.
Sucking Out on the Rivers.
Oh, it's a shot at Joan Rivers from Celebrity Apprentice.
Big time. She says there's going to be some stuff out there. We're just going to have fun.
Yeah.
She's got several, I started to say female impersonators on it. I don't know if they all are or not, but basically the only ones they could find that looked like Joan were men. So, you know.
Right.
There's supposed to be 20 of them out there.
There's a guy in Vegas named Frank Marino who appears in one of the shows, I think it's at the Riviera or somewhere else, who's very famous for his Joan Rivers imitation and has probably been having a lot of fun lately after Joan was on The Celebrity Apprentice. Is he going to be there?
He will be there. He will be one of them in center stage with Annie.
For those of you who don't know about the Annie Duke Joan Rivers Celebrity Apprentice rivalry, I think the best way to sum it up is in the words of Joan Rivers herself. Roll it, Jason.
And your people, you give money with blood on it. I met your people in Vegas for 40 years. None of them have last names. None of them. They have cash fulls of... You're a poker player. A poker player. That's
awesome.
Beyond white trash.
Poker players are
poker
the most
players.
Awesome people poker in the world.
Poker players are trash, darling. Trash.
Yeah. Sucking Out on the Rivers is a great idea for a promotion. A nice fundraiser at the Hard Rock on tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, but I can only find Joan River imitators here.
Yeah.
I mean, surely somewhere in the world, maybe not. I started to say somebody that would look like Melissa, but never mind.
No,
never mind.
It would just have to be a younger Joan.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, that sounds like a lot of fun.
So you're doing that
tomorrow. That's a very busy first day.
Uh-huh.
And then Thursday, are you doing anything in the morning before you go to the 40K?
Of course. They've got interviews set up, and I've got some media things to do that day, too. So they actually, you know, they have the session called The Nuts.
Yeah, we had Norman Chad on a couple of weeks ago, the commentator from ESPN. We talked to him about what he was going to be doing this year. Has he invited you to do one?
He has. I will be out there filming that prior to starting the first event. I have no idea what they're going to have me doing, but I'm going to have some fun.
Well, you know, when he did one with Daniel Negreanu, it was street hockey they were playing. With Eric Lindgren, it was shooting hoops. I can't remember Kirstie Gaze's husband's name, but he was kicking field goals.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea what it is he's going to put
no
you through?
No idea what's going on. It's supposed to be something that way. Plus, they also do comments on the others. He might be showing me tapes of a couple of other people that have done them and then ask for comments on that. So, you know, who knows what it'll be.
All right. So that's just your first 2 days.
That's correct.
Of the World Series of Poker.
We haven't started scheduling anything yet.
Now, are you going to play in the 1K? On Saturday?
I hope not.
You're not going to?
No, I hope not, because I hope I will be in day three of the 40K yet.
Which starts Thursday and is a three-day event.
It's a four-day event.
Oh, it is?
It is a four-day. It ends on Sunday.
All right. Now, let's get into a little, since we were talking over-under on your wiffle ball thing, let's do a little over-under here, and I'll tell you what, I'll let you set the number, and then I'll pick the over or the under on these.
Okay.
How many people are going to enter the 40K event that you'll be in on Thursday? I mean, that's a lot of money, and it's probably going to be some of the best players in the world. How many people are going to get into that thing?
Actually, that question's been asked a lot. They were expecting around 300, said they were. They backed it down to 250. I know the 50 horse has about 150 typically. I think you're going to be a little bit better than the 150 that play in the 50K horse. 182.
You're saying the number is 182.
182.
Boy, that's a really good number. I was hoping you'd say like 175 because it's a lock for the over on 175, I think.
Okay.
Wow, 182 is a great number. Are people qualifying for this online? Are Stars and Full Tilt and the others, are they sending people in?
Not online. They're qualifying out there. There is qualifications on it for Wednesday. to play for Thursday. But there is not online that I know of.
All right, I'm going to take the over on 182.
Ooh, okay.
You like the under?
I honestly picked 182 for a reason.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good. All right, and now the other thing is Saturday is the 1K event, what they call the Stimulus Special. It's the cheapest of the World Series non-casino employee events, $1,000 buy-in. They were talking about hopefully getting 5,000 people to sign up for this, which would be the biggest non-main event field ever.
Yep.
Give me a number on that. How many entrants will they get for the 1K?
Not a chance they're going to get 5,000. Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Not a chance they're going to get 5,000. I doubt if they get 4,000. Going to be right around that area. Let me see. All righty. Well, from your reaction, you actually think they're going to get closer to the point.
No.
So I can bump it up a little bit.
I'm not.
No, you had a tell.
You know what? I think it's a false tell.
Uh-oh.
I think I was giving off something because I honestly have no idea.
4,048.
4,048 is your pick of how many people will be in this.
Yes.
You know, they're doing two day ones, Saturday and Sunday, and they're set up to take 3,000 each day.
Yeah, but that's the same they do in the World Series. Those 4 days, they're set up for 3,000. They never get 3,000.
No. I think 4,048 is a good number. I'm going to take the under, though.
Because, I was on positive you'd take the over.
No, and here's
you
my
set
thinking.
Set me up, didn't you?
Here's my thinking. You know, you and Joe McGowan and I had a discussion last week about playing in an event like that or playing in some of the deep stack events at Caesars.
True.
And you guys were advising me to try to go for this because it's a bracelet event, because it's such a big field. I think I'm going to hold off until the following Tuesday and play in the first $1,500 event only because I want more chips. I don't like the idea of buying in for a 3,000 chip event with the blind starting at 25 and 50.
Yeah.
I haven't had luck in those. I'm not particularly fond of those. So I'm not going to play in the 1K. I'm going to wait for the 1,500. And I'm hoping that there'll be some people like me who will do that as well. And so I'm going to take the under on your 40-48.
Okay.
All right?
I understand that.
Now, how about the main event, which you, of course, were in last year, and you made it to the final table out of 6,844.
Correct.
What do you think the number is going to be this year? Before you answer, I will tell you, pre-registrations online on the World Series of Poker website are up. Hotel reservations in Las Vegas are up. Mm-hmm. They are saying that despite the economy, especially because of the European players who are getting value for the dollar because the dollar is so cheap for them, that a lot of European players and Asian players may prop this thing up considerably. You were in it last year with a field of 68-44. What's your number for this year?
Actually, I did a little research on that, too, because that's another standard question everybody asks me on it. And I think on PokerStars, last I checked, and that was several days ago, they were up to 813 people already qualified on PokerStars. We're a month and a half away, and they already have 800 qualified on PokerStars.
Okay.
So it's going to be a huge number from there and from the other sites. The number will be up on it. It will not equal what was when Jamie Gold was out there.
Which was 8,000.
8,300, I believe.
Okay.
On that. It will not get that high. There's no way in the world. Probably a little bit over 74. 73 to 74. I'm going to say 74-11.
74-11. I'm taking the under. I think the under is a lock on this.
Okay.
I think a lot of this interest has been from people who are going to the World Series perhaps for the first time and are going to play in a lot of the smaller events. And maybe I'll be wrong, but I think that they won't even get close to 7,000. In fact, I think there may end up being a smaller field than you had last year because of the Americans and the depressed economy here and perhaps its impact on people who can get in that way.
That one I am going to disagree with you on.
Okay.
Simply because, now, and the other argument you can have with, if you go to a lot of these, like the Bellagio, like the others, they are down from last year.
Yeah.
Absolutely are.
Yep.
But they are down because a lot of people actually are waiting for the World Series.
Yep.
People are not playing these others. They're not traveling around. They want to go to Vegas. They want to play in it. If you can only play in one tournament during the year, one major one, which one are you going to pick?
Well, if you can qualify for it and get in, the main event is, you know, that's the Super Bowl and the World Series combined.
It absolutely is. So I really think the numbers will be a little higher than you're saying. I might be too high, but, you know, hey, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Harrah's announced that the World Series of Poker is going to be streaming some of their final tables. Two dozen events are going to be streamed live online, either on the Bluff magazine site or on ESPN 360.
Yep.
Now, I don't believe you're going to have whole card cameras at those tables.
No, you will not.
So, essentially, it'll be slightly delayed because they don't want it live where somebody could get on a cell phone and tell a player or text a player about what's going on while they're in the hand. But that'll be another way for people to watch some of these events. And they're going to be mostly the smaller $1,500 and $2,500 events, because the bigger events, the 40K and the 10K, are going to be televised by ESPN come the fall.
They're televising four.
Mm-hmm.
40K to begin with, the Andy Up for Africa, the main event. The fourth one they're doing is that Tournament of Champions.
Oh, the Celebrities Invitational, the Champions Invitational,
Champions,
as they call
Invitational,
it.
Champions Invitational. Yeah. The 27 living former champs are going to be invited back.
Yep.
And if you just stop, you know, first of all, you go, well, you know, it's going to be people like Amarillo Slim and things like that. But no, that's going to be people like Johnny Chan, like Jesus Ferguson, like Chris Moneymaker, like Joe Hashem. You know, down the list, there are some tough players, including a guy, you know, by the name of Doyle Bronson.
Yeah. Now, I went to the Bodog website, and they've got odds up that you can bet on.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
For the celebrity for the Champions Invitational.
Okay.
Who do you think they have picked as the favorite in that event? And it's probably only going to be about two dozen players.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, most of it is 27. I'm guessing they'd be lucky to get 20 of them there.
They've got 21 players who have RSVP'd who will be there, not including Jesus, but I'm sure he'll do it.
Well, yeah. And actually, if you want me to pick one right now of the bunch, Jesus has got to be right up there.
Really?
Yes.
I will tell you that there are a lot of people on the Bodog site who are much bigger favorites than Chris Jesus Ferguson. And the favorite that they have picked?
Yeah.
Phil Hellmuth.
Okay. I may have to go on that site.
Phil Hellmuth is 9-1. 9-1 as the favorite on this. In the second tier at 11.5-1, your friends Joe Hashem and Greg Raymer.
Yeah.
Scotty Wynn.
Yep.
Huck Seed.
Huck Seed's good.
Dan Harrington.
Ooh, I don't know I'd have him that high.
Dan's made a couple of final tables in the last 5 years.
He has, absolutely. He's a solid, solid player, but you're only playing with 20 players here on it. I don't know what the structure is. I'm assuming it's going to be a fairly more of a speed-like structure. Dan plays deep stack poker very, very well.
Yeah.
He needs a deep stack to do this.
All right. Also at 11.5-1, Doyle Brunson and Johnny Chan.
Okay.
At 13-1, you've got Peter Eastgate.
Okay.
Last year's champion. At 15-1, that's where you find Jesus Ferguson, Jamie Gold, Chris Moneymaker, Jerry Yang, who won the event 2 years ago. And then on the outside, with no shot really, at 19-1 or better, you got Robert Varconi, who was the guy who won the year before Chris Moneymaker and really hasn't done anything since, and Tom McAvoy and a bunch of people you don't know. At 65-1 is Russ Hamilton, the one-time WSOP main event champion who got embroiled in the ultimate bet fixing scandal, and I would be shocked if he even showed up, wouldn't you?
He's not even going to be there.
Yeah.
There's no way.
We got to take a break, and we'll come back with Joe McGowan, the poker coach. We've got lots more to talk about the World Series of Poker, including a new sponsor, and lots more about Dennis's schedule as we go forward, plus a couple of hands that I played over the last couple of days, including one in a deep stack big money game. And I'm going to talk to both you and Joe about this to see whether you think I did the right thing. All of that ahead here on the Lumiere Place Final Table. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And as always, the show is brought to you in part by our friends at PokerStars.
Oh, yeah, PokerStars. As I said earlier, 800 and some seats already to the main event. This is the largest site in the world. Wherever you go in the world, you can find PokerStars. They are there, they are big, they are strong. They will play any kind of game, any kind of level, and at any time during the day. If you get up at 6 in the morning, you can play. If you go to bed at midnight, you can play. I mean, whatever you want to do, it's there. These guys are just flat-out awesome, and they're always trying to tweak it and change it and make it better for the common man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love the way they do this thing.
And for people who play online, they've got these steps tournaments that you can get in with just some frequent player points and work your way up the steps, a single-table satellite. You beat that, or even make it into the top two of your table, you move up the steps and up the steps and up the steps, and once you get to the top of the ladder, boom, you're in the main event of the World Series of Poker.
You actually can get into the main event without spending a dime.
PokerStars, one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table. More after this.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Our engineer Brad was just asking what were the odds on Dennis in that Champions thing. Dennis didn't win last year. He came in third in the main event, winning $4.5 million, making it to the November 9. Let's invite in our friend Joe McGowan. We call him the poker coach because he's given us so many terrific tips about cash games and tournament play. And over the last 3 weeks, we've been getting deep into some advice for you if you're going to be going out and playing in the main event or any of the other events at the World Series of Poker. Joe, welcome back to the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Hey, thanks, guys. Happy to be here.
Always a pleasure having you on. I want to ask you and Dennis a question that doesn't have to do with card strategy as much as it has to do with strategy at the table. Joe, I've watched you play, and you always wear sunglasses when you're in a hand. You don't always have them on at the table, but once you put money into the pot, you've got your sunglasses on. Dennis never wears sunglasses. And I get emails at our email address for the show, which is DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. I get them almost every week, and Dennis gets them too, from people who want to know how to play at the table and what they should wear. I even got one just this morning from a guy named Monty, who is an online player who wants to start playing live, and he wonders, should he wear sunglasses and a hat and a hood like Phil Locke? What is your advice on that as the poker coach?
Well, I like the sunglasses. Of course, I wear them. I like sunglasses for a couple of reasons. Some stuff maybe people don't quite think about, but if you know you're being watched and you want to do something, illegal, you're probably not going to do it. You think the police are outside watching you or something's going on like that. In poker, if you know I'm watching you and the action's on you, you're not going to be relaxed. You're going to be guarded. You're not going to do things maybe in a natural way. If my head is turned to the left and you're sitting to my right, but I kind of have that spy eye out of the corner of my eye and I have the sunglasses on where you can't see my eyes, you have no clue that I'm looking at you, you'll probably act more natural and give off more real, genuine tells to the strength of your hand. So I like it for that. And then another obvious one is I like it for people that can't see my eyes. They don't see what I look like when I'm looking at my cards. They don't see how I react to the flop. If I get a little wide-eyed or if I start paying attention a little bit more, my eyes start to scatter around the table because I'm looking for where the action is because I might have a big hand. So, of course, it blocks my eyes from them, but it helps me kind of keep an eye on everybody else without them knowing that I'm watching. And I think the third thing for me is I really like when I'm in a hand heads up and I'm going to battle with someone heads up and I make a bet. I stare at them, and I'm looking for anything. When they glance up at me, when I don't have my glasses on, my instinct is to kind of break eye contact and look away. When I have my glasses on, I can be as confident as can be. This player cannot see me. I can continue to stare right at them, even though I know they're looking at me, and I can try to pick up information. So those are some of the reasons why I'm a big fan of the sunglasses for me and why they work for me.
All right. Then, Dennis, why don't you wear sunglasses at the table?
I just want to feel natural and relaxed at it. And anything like that that could possibly bother me, I don't wear sunglasses ever. I've never worn them in my life. I don't wear them when I'm driving. I don't wear them at the beach. I don't wear them anywhere. So putting them on there, they don't feel natural. I don't wear other glasses either. Mm-hmm. I've got 20/20 vision, and I've got great peripheral vision too. Mm-hmm. When Joe's talking about it, I like to be able to stare straight ahead. If I'm sitting in the five seat, stare right at the dealer, and I can see every person on that table yet. Mm-hmm. But we're looking straight at the dealer.
Mm-hmm.
So
and
I
can
wanna,
you pick up tells?
Again, there is an advantage to what Joe is saying here, being able to look out of the corner of your eye and stare directly at a person without him knowing it. I will grant him that. But for me to feel comfortable at table is the utmost thing, and I feel comfortable without the glasses on it.
Joe, talk for a minute about eye tells, if you would. And I know we did a whole segment on table tells a while ago, and maybe we'll get back to you doing another series on that. But let's say you're playing against somebody who is not wearing sunglasses and they make a bet and you look up at them and they are staring you down. What does that usually indicate?
Well, a lot of times when people are staring you down, it really could go a lot of ways. I mean, it depends upon where and what point in the hand that you're in. A lot of people take that as weakness if someone is trying to intimidate you. You know, they're trying to stare at you. But I think that's more of like a beginner type of mistake where a beginning level player will try to stare at you and intimidate you. I have a big hand, and they really don't. So if you're playing in like a little home game, a $30 buy-in or something, you know, you might see that. But as for more advanced players, you know, stuff that I see a lot, when somebody hits the flop and they have pocket, you know, four is not a very exciting hand, and it's multi-way action, and a four is right in the window, you know, they know that their body and arms and, you know, their chest and their breathing and everything like this, and if they perk up, it's going to be noticed. But what people tend to forget is their eyes, you know, really get active when they tend to hit the flop. And if you watch the same player and they don't hit the flop or they don't have anything, they just kind of stay kind of lazy-eyed typically. So I see a lot of players and good players, their eyes get pretty active when they hit the flop or they have a big hand. So that's something that I look for.
So they get kind of scatterized? Their eyes are moving back and forth a lot?
Yeah, that's what I tend to call it. And, you know, if you watch Phil Ivey play, he has that all the time. So therefore,
Phil Ivey has that drink and a cup of coffee.
Right, right. It's always case by case. It's always, you know, person to person. But it is something that I like to put into the category of what I call those confirmed tells. Once you get it on somebody, whether it's in your local casino you play with on every Friday night, you know, or if it's at a poker table at a tournament, you're playing with them for 5-6 hours, you've seen them with some strong hands, you've seen them with some weak hands, they act and look a certain way with the weak ones, whether it be with their eyes, whatever other tells you're looking for, and they act a different way, distinctly when they have a big hand. And that's the type of information you want to use when you're in a pot against them. And that's crucial information to help you make big decisions, big bluffs, and help you be a winning poker player.
So, for instance, if you're sitting there watching two other players involved in a hand and their heads up, and one of them makes a move on Dennis, for instance, bets into Dennis, and then stares him down, and let's say Dennis makes the call or whatever happens there, we end up seeing that player's hand and it was a stone cold bluff, you kind of put that in your memory bank and say, okay, he was putting on a stone cold bluff and he was putting on the big stare. If that happens to me later on, I'll know that, I'll remember that, and I can use it against him.
Right. Now, really very far advanced players, really far advanced players, top players, will know what they look like when they got caught bluffing. They'll remember how they put the chips in the pot. They'll remember that they maybe stared the guy down. And next time they have a big hand, they're hoping that another talented player at the table noticed that, and they will do a reverse tell. But that is very, very rare. You know, typically for your average player, an average decent player, they're just not going to do stuff like that. And I won't say you can take it to the bank, but I think I like to say, you know, if you're on the fence with the call, and you're really not sure whether to call or not, and you see that, that's when I'd use the information. Okay, that's enough to put me over the edge this way to call, or put me over the edge this way to fold. Because one piece of information by itself, you know, it's good, but you like to add up the entire piece of the puzzle, you know, and many times it's 10 to 20 pieces. You know, what position was he in? Did he raise? Did he not raise? Did he limp? What did he look like after the flop? Did he check? You know, all these things, and they add up quick, and you add up all those different pieces of information with the final piece when you make your final decision, perhaps on the river, to call that big bet. You know, you add it all up. So, again, just some of the things that I look for, that I like, that I use, that work pretty well for me.
Well, and there's so many people that maybe even don't wear the glasses. They are self-conscious about something, maybe with their mouth, that they do something that way. And you see lots of people that cover their mouth when they're doing it. You see Phil Hellmuth go into his mode where he puts his glasses on and he puts his hands in front of his face, tries to hide everything. He'll even talk through his hands at times because he doesn't want to give anything away like that. But then Phil's the prince of, you know, double tails and everything else like that, or at least he thinks he is. So he's always trying to send weakness or always trying to send strength or something like that on it and trying to do it. I think he does a little overboard, actually. He's a great player. He really is.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about that. But I think he tries to overdo it at times on it.
You know, when we first started talking about this, I was mentioning Monty's email, and he was asking about sunglasses and hats as well. One thing that I've noticed in quite a few players at kind of the 1-3 and 2-5 level of play is they'll wear a hat, and if they've got a really strong hand, that's when they tip their hat down so you can't see their eyes. The rest of the time, when they don't have a big monster hand, they're kind of watching and paying attention, mm-hmm. and they're keeping their head up, and you can see right into their eyes. They don't realize that that hat brim becomes a tell for them so often. I'm sure you've noticed that as well, Joe.
Well,
yeah, you are spot on.
Yeah, where I would go with this, basically, when you're looking at a person, you want them to do something different. Whether it's tipping his hat back, pulling his head down, looking away from you, staring you in the eyes. Notice what he does and then what the end result is. That's when you get your confirmed tells. That's when you're actually putting something together. If the guy dances a jig in front of you, and that may be, you know, a tell. You know, obviously I'm overstating it or something like that. But something as simple as taking a drink of water. Something as simple as playing with his chips. Something as simple as that he can't meet you with his eyes. You know, all of these things are potential tells. So if the guy does something different, something notable, something that you can put in your memory, use it.
Yeah, that's why you got to pay attention even when you're not in the hand at the table.
Oh, absolutely. It's the best time to do it.
All right, Joe, stand by. That's Joe, the poker coach McGowan, with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. This portion of the show brought to you by American Image Salon and Spa. Do something special for the woman in your life. Mother's Day was a couple of weeks ago, but that's not the only day of the year you got to think of your wife or your mom or your girlfriend or your daughter. American Image Salon and Spa is a great place to call to get something special for that lady in your life. For $125, you can get her a gift certificate for a spa facial, an express pedicure, and a mini Aveda hand and foot release. And if you mention that you heard about it from Dennis and Paul on the Final Table, you'll get $25 off. So it's only $100 now to make the woman in your life so happy. Here's the phone number, 314-878-5210. That's 878-5210. Or go to their website, AmericanImageSalon.com. Even if you don't want that special, we mentioned the head-to-toe spa package. There are plenty of other packages you can get there and plenty of gift certificates, perfect for any occasion. And with graduation season here, think of your daughter graduating from high school or college. Or middle school, or kindergarten. What? No, I think that's a little bit young. But whoever the woman in your life is, American Image Salon has something wonderful for them. 878-5210 is their number in Chesterfield. Or go to their website, AmericanImageSalon.com. We're back to talk more poker in a moment here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
In just two short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with two-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
If you wear gloves at work, you've got to know the Glove Guy. 314-509-5241 or glovesforyou.com. The Glove Guy is Bill Hyatt, who sells gloves all over the country from his base right here in St. Louis. The Glove Guy has over 400 different styles of gloves and safety wear available to you. Brown jersey gloves, PVC dotted gloves, single leather palm gloves, Kevlar gloves, leather driver gloves, and more. Chemical resistant gloves, latex gloves, vinyl gloves, string knit gloves, palm coated gloves, and he carries mechanics gloves too. Don't buy your gloves one pair at a time. The Glove Guy sells gloves by the dozen and by the case. See everything the Glove Guy sells on his website, glovesforyou.com. That's gloves, the number 4YOU.com. If you don't see it there, the Glove Guy can help you find it. That's the Glove Guy, Bill Hyatt, 314-509-5241 or glovesforyou.com.
Tuesday night is poker night on 590 The Fan KFNS. So let's go back live to Lumiere Place Casino Poker Room with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
Welcome back to downtown St. Louis, and thanks to those of you listening to the podcast of this show, available every week on thechipleader.com. If you have missed the previous 17 shows, you can find them right there and listen to them with any of our guests over the last 4 months. Next week, we'll be doing the show in Las Vegas at the Rio at the World Series of Poker. Dennis leaves in the morning for that. Joe and I will be getting out there on Friday night. Joe is the poker coach, Joe McGowan, who we're talking with about some tips for the World Series of Poker. And I want to ask you guys your advice on a hand that I played this weekend. But first, let's have a word about another one of our terrific sponsors who are sponsoring this segment of the Lumiere Place Final Table, and that's Show Me's Bar and Grill.
I am getting to be a regular Show Me's. Let me tell you, the wings they have there and the sandwiches they have there are just flat-out excellent. 10 wings for $5.95, lunch special right here on the landing. You can run down to it quick and easy. They are doing some great things down there. They've also now are doing some things that I like. They are sponsoring a golf scramble, and it's going to be for the local center over there, the William B. DeBell Center on that. I went ahead and donated 4 Cardinal tickets for it, guys, 4 Cardinal tickets over there at it. It's a golf scramble on June 1st on it. If you need to, go to their website or go to any of the Show Me's, and they have information on that. But it's one over here on the east side over there at Fairview Heights is where the major sponsor of it. Anyhow, go to this restaurant, guys. If you have a You've got to try these wings. I'm telling you, they bring them to you. They're great. They're fantastic. They're hot, hot, hot. Show Me's Restaurant. It's a beautiful place to go to and a great place to relax at.
We're happy to have them as a sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table. All right, this weekend I was playing in a cash game here in St. Louis, and it was a pretty active game with a lot of pre-flop raising. And here's the hand I want your thoughts on. I'm under the gun, so right there next to the big blind. And I've got a pair of jacks. And Dennis, you're famous for saying there are 20 plays, 20 different ways to play jacks. Every one of them is wrong.
Absolutely.
Maybe I played this one completely wrong. Because I knew that there had been a lot of pre-flop raising, and I'm under the gun here, I just limped with my jacks, thinking that it would probably get raised, and depending on my tell on that player, perhaps I would re-raise them. If not, I probably would just call and see the flop. Well, by the time it gets around the table, I've got 7 people in the pot and no raise. Not great when you've got a pair of jacks, right?
No, not at all.
Any over card comes, you're going to be dead. Any pair in the middle comes, you're going to be dead. So you're going to play this hand very cautiously. And at this point, I'm very happy to have gotten in just by limping.
You're about playing it like pocket deuces or pocket threes now almost.
Okay. The flop comes jack 9-8. So I have flopped a set of jacks. Pretty powerful.
Top set.
I check. Action's on me. I check. By the time it gets back around to me, there's a bet, a raise, and a re-raise all in by the player to my right who's in the big blind. Now, I know that the first player probably was raising with something perhaps like ace-jack. That's what I put him on. I know that the guy at the other end got at least a set, or possibly has queen 10 or 10-7. The guy to my right is a pretty tight player, and I know that he's not re-raising for his entire stack unless he's got queen 10 for the flopped straight. I'm 100% sure he has flopped the straight. What should I do with my jacks in this situation with a board of jack 9-8?
His all-in covers you?
No. I've got more than twice as much as he's got on the table.
Okay. So
And the guy at the other end doesn't have as much as the all-in player does. Close.
How much is
but
in the pot?
Not as much. You know, we're playing 5-10, so it's $70 pre-flop. The first raiser made it 80. I mean, the first bettor on the flop made it 80. The next guy, when it got around to him, made it 225. And the guy who moved all in for about $830. So you've got about $1,100 in the pot already. And I'm fairly sure that the guy who was the first raiser there, who's at the other end of the table for me, I'm fairly sure he's going to call because it's not for his entire stack. He's got about maybe 650 or 700 total.
I'll take a shot with it.
Okay.
Go for it. I got my opinion.
Okay. All right. Well, I think first, when you limped under the gun, to just back up a little bit, right there, I would definitely not be doing that to check raise. You know, once I limp under the gun, I'm basically choosing to, if it gets multi-way action, I'm trying to flop a jack and hopefully now win a big pot. Likely there's going to be overcards come that are going to petrify the jacks, and you're not going to be able to really do much if you get two or three callers with the jacks. So the limp under the gun is fine, but right there, I don't think you're really doing it to check raise. You know, at least I wouldn't, unless, like you said, you had a great tell or read on somebody and was maybe heads up or something.
You're talking about pre-flop.
Pre-flop.
Right.
Up to the pre-flop. So now that you've seen the flop and it's seven-way action, the thing that you have going for you, in my opinion, is other than like a situation where you flop and you have 6-8 of hearts and you limp in and the flop comes 2 hearts, and someone else went all in, and you have like a backdoor straight draw, and you have the flush draw, and someone else might come in, hey, should I go all in here? You know, those I definitely more likely tend to fold with limited information because you're not drawing to the nuts. With the pocket jacks, you flop top set, no matter what they have, you are drawing live to the nuts. And I would, if your read was that the other players behind are likely to hop on board, I would definitely tend to call. I wouldn't raise because I wouldn't want to isolate this player. Why do that? I want to encourage other people to come in. If someone else has the low end of the straight or a bottom set or two pair, I'm hoping they come in, although the two pair, of course, would hurt because it takes away somebody else, but you really don't know what they have. So I would probably cry call. It's a tough spot. You certainly don't like it, and I would hope that other people hopped on board and called, and you're going to play a big pot and kind of hope that you get lucky. And that's one of those spots where, to me, if you play a lot of poker, at the end of the day, because now the pot got so big, you got a pretty big price and you have good odds, the long run, you're going to be ahead. Even though in the short run, you're likely up against the straight, and it may be you and him only, and the board doesn't pair, and you lost a big pot. But that would be some of my take. Dennis, what do you think?
Well, it's similar to what you're saying, a couple of different things. If I'm going to limp under the gun, I'm probably going to limp with either aces or kings to try and come back and isolate and, get it all in pre-flop and go against somebody. Jacks, tens, nines, I'm probably not going to limp with under there. I want to see where I'm at, and I want to control the number of people playing.
Right.
Also controlling the pot. If I make it a 3X and somebody comes back at me, triple what I bet, and it's isolated where I'm just me against him, I'm out of position, I'll throw away tens a lot of times pre-flop. Doesn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm.
I figure there's always another hand. But aces or kings, then if somebody comes over, you've got it. You can dominate. You can go over the top. You can either take it down now with a decent amount, and if they call you, you really don't care. You've got aces or kings.
I mean.
And if you have kings and he has aces, well, I'll get another hand somewhere else because that type. The two things you have, like Joe was saying, a good point he did. You have the nuts if you catch your boat on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have the top set. You don't have middle set or third set on it.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. Even if a person has the nuts right now, has a queen ten. You've got 7 outs on the turn, and you've got 10 outs on the river then to catch your boat, both of which would obviously beat him on that.
Yep.
The disadvantage to this, because you had two other people in it, it's not a heads up or anything like that, is that they more than likely have some of those outs. They could have pocket tens and have what they think might be the best hand and be able to catch the straight. They could have a 10-9 and make that. Now, granted, the guy that pushed it all in, I think, is obviously better than it. But the first two hands could have been some hand like that on it.
Yep.
Right.
I cannot see, at this stage, laying down the top set, though. I may not have been happy with it. Joe makes a great point when he says you don't want to force the others out because you want the pot odds if you catch it. Because I'm telling you, you catch an 8 or a 9, nobody can beat you.
Right.
So, you want them in the pot.
Yep.
So I agree with that. I can't lay it down. I've got a call.
Okay. Now let me just change the scenario before I tell you what happened and another question about this hand. Take it out of a cash game and put it into a tournament. And now you got a call for all of your chips. You got a call for your tournament life here. The guy who pushes you all in, let's say he's got slightly more chips than you do, and if you make this call and you blank off the board, you don't catch your full house, you're done for the day. Are you calling there?
You want me to go first this time, Joe, or you want it?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, we have limited information here because
these are real scenarios that people are going to run into.
I'll answer the question the best I can, but it is limited. Are you close to a bubble? Are you already deep into it? I mean, there's so many other variables on this thing because this is your tournament life on that. Again, Most of the times, I guarantee I'm going to make that call, even in a tournament. But yes, there are times when I would lay it down. If I'm fighting to get into the money or something like that, there's a good chance of laying it down. If I've got a dominant chip stack where I have the rest of the table crushed in chips, why do I want to take the chance? Let them fight among themselves.
Right.
I could fold it away. But if I'm in the middle, if I'm where I need to get some chips, if I'm, you know, fighting against these guys and I think I've got, you know, where I'm going to catch the nuts and I've got my 7 outs and 10 outs and everything, I would say probably at least 60-70% of the, at a minimum, I'm calling that.
Joe?
Probably higher than that.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I don't think I'm getting away from that hand, you know, cash game or tournament. And like Dennis is talking about, it would be an extreme-type situation, you know, a really strong, confirmed tell, coupled with, you know, these guys behind me, they're not calling, they're already disinterested, one guy's already kind of pre-mucking his hand, which is what I term, you know, a guy that looks like he's getting ready to fold and disinterested in the pot, and it just doesn't seem right, and, you know, if I fold this hand, I make the final table or something with a full more player out or a massive pay jump, you know, some stuff like that with all those things lined up. But in actuality, for me, I don't know, maybe I'm just not good enough to make that fold, and I probably should.
Oh, come on.
You know, I think I just cry call there and hope that the guy, you know, sometimes, depending upon the player, sometimes a guy has ace-king if he's a beginner and he's in a tournament, maybe like a $1,000 tournament coming up in the World Series, and he misses the flop and he thinks he has a monster. I mean, you see guys like that. So,
yep.
You know, this guy might have two pair. Likely he doesn't. You know, you said you were pretty sure Paulie had the straight.
I was 100% sure he had the queen 10 for the straight.
Well, then, you know, then you're really, then, see, there's an extreme situation where possibly you can make a case of folding if you think the guy's behind you. That's where you really pay attention to the guys to your left. And that's where hopefully you've done your homework of stuff that I've talked about, studying the table and watching to see if you have any confirmed tells on these guys. Are they the type, once they've bet and there's been a raise, you know, and they give up on the pot instantly, or do they stay, you know, really in there and really in their poker pose, if you will, and don't give up any information? You can't tell if they're going to raise, fold, you know, or call. You have no clue. So if they're tipping their hand and you can tell if they're going to fold, well, then, you know, there would be an extreme case that you could make a crazy, you know, incredible laydown. But like I said, for me, I have to say, I think 99 out of 100, I'm calling there. Not
yeah, I don't know. Nah, not 99 out of 100, but you're right. The vast majority of time, you just got a call there.
Yeah, which is what I did. I made the crying call. I did the math in my head, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm either like a 33% or 40%. The 33% I figured was if the original bettor had two pair, that takes away two more of my outs. But still, at 33%, I'm getting 2-1 on my money if the guy at the other end calls, and that's exactly what my numbers are going to be here. And, you know, I'm going to take down a monster pot if I win this thing. I called, the board blanked off, and I lost. And I thought about it on the way home. You know, even after all the other hands I played that day, that was the one that was in my mind.
Yep.
I'm glad that I have a couple of other guys who agree that I played it wrong pre-flop, but played it the way I probably should have once the flop got there.
Yeah.
Joe McGowan is the poker coach. Dennis Phillips is the poker millionaire. And I'm Paul Harris, the guy who's just playing poker. And we'll be back with more on the Lumiere Plays Final Table in just a moment here. This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches, the company that Dennis wears on his wrist every day.
I wear this at tournaments all around the world, and I guarantee I have not been to a tournament yet where somebody hasn't pointed over and says, can I see that watch? This thing is absolutely gorgeous. It stands out. It's easy to see. You can see it at night. You can see it in day. And you can play with it. You don't have to worry. You go out and play a round of golf. You leave it on. You go play. When Oral is throwing that ball at me, I can wear this watch safely for that wiffle ball.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a heck of a watch. It really is. Totally dependable, totally guaranteed. They will fix this watch. No questions asked if anything happens to it. Reactor Watch, it's just, you got to go to their website and look it over. I absolutely have to.
ReactorWatches.com is their website. They're one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table here on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
There's a big article in the New York Times today about Barney Frank's legislation to license and regulate online gambling companies. mostly through the help of the people at the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance, who are one of the sponsors of this show, the Lumiere Place Final Table. You can get more information by going to Poker Players Alliance or just ppa.org. Barney Frank is pushing this through. He's got a couple of dozen sponsors now. He has not asked the Obama administration for help on this, but we think that the president probably would sign it if the legislation got to his desk. And in this article, I'm going to quote to you, Congressman Frank says he believes lobbying by poker players and other fans of online gambling could help reverse the ban. He intends to move the bill through his committee before Congress begins its break in August. Now, there's one roadblock they have to get past, which is that Harry Reid, the Senate Democratic Majority Leader, is a senator from Nevada. And, of course, the gaming companies in Nevada don't like online play. Or at least we thought until Harris just launched a new this just Friday afternoon before the weekend was going, and they've hired a guy named Mitch Garber, who's the former CEO of Party Gaming, which runs Party Poker, which is a big site outside the United States. And Jeffrey Pollack, who's the commissioner of the World Series of Poker, is going to be also the president of this organization. I think this is a major first step in some of the brick-and-mortar companies leaning in the direction that, of course, PokerStars is the leader in now in online poker. And once they start doing that, perhaps that takes away some of those obstacles that are making Harry Reid oppose this in the Senate. If those lobbyists from those companies jump on board with the PPA and PokerStars and Full Tilt and all the rest, I think we got a better chance at passing this thing this year.
I think you got a stampede coming, because what it is, they're fighting it. Oh, wait, it looks like it's going to pass. We're pushing for it. I'm telling you, they're going to do a complete flip around. They're going to try and get on it, because this is a major, major thing. Everybody in the world loves to play poker, and they like to play it online.
Yeah.
There is no reason in the world, if it's properly regulated, properly controlled, that they cannot have this.
You can help out with the cause by joining the Poker Players Alliance. It's only $20 to join. Go to the website, ppa.org. Now, Dennis was involved in a little fantasy poker draft a couple of days ago. Who dragged you into this?
A gentleman from ESPN. Andrew Feldman, the guy, met him out there last year. We've been in conversation back and forth. I think this is the fourth annual fantasy poker draft.
So what do you do? Are you picking players who you think will go deep in the main event or in all events? What is it?
You're picking players that are going to, and it's going to be a compiling of all the different events and how they finish in each and every one of them. So you need to have players that are playing in a lot of different ones and go deep in them.
Okay.
So it's wide open.
You want to pick players who play a lot of events.
Absolutely.
If you pick somebody like a Doyle Brunson, he doesn't play many events.
Well, see, but there's a different thing to that. Doyle doesn't play a whole lot of events, doesn't even like to play tournaments, but he'll always play several of them out there. However, there's one event out there that's going to be limited to only about 21 people.
The 40K that you're playing in on Thursday.
No, I'm talking about the Tournament of Champions.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
And he's going to go deep in that because he starts out deep in it.
Yeah.
With only 21 players.
Right.
And the way the pay structure is, him sitting down at the table is going to get you about 5 points. So it's not a bad, there's a guaranteed prices on that.
I'm guessing that Doyle's on your list when you did your fantasy draft this weekend.
About the last pick, but yeah, nobody picked him, and it's sort of, I have such respect for this guy, I couldn't say him not being on somebody's team.
Who else do you have on your list?
Well, the first two that were picked on it, first two that I picked was Michael Binger and Scotty.
Okay.
You know,
If Scotty can stay away from the Michelobes. Well, you know what? That doesn't seem to impact him all that much.
And the other thing about Scotty is now he's got that $4 million prop bet. He says, I'm going to win $4 million here. I'm never going to play poker again.
Yeah, I think he had a few Michelobes in him when he said that. I like your pick of Michael Binger. He's pretty good. Who else is on your list?
Michael is solid. Well, there's several others of them on that. And again, I like Brandon Cantu. Played against him. He was down to the final 27. He's got a ton of different caches. He plays a lot of different games out there. And he'll be playing for the whole 6 weeks. So I think Brandon will do well on it. He wasn't picked.
Okay.
Nevada Medic, another one that's going to be up there and can finish fairly deep. Very, very respected. Mortensen. I can't even talk. Good, solid players on this lineup here on it. But again, this is the first year I did it. Howard Lederer is giving me lessons now on what I should have done. Daniel Negreanu would love to have a prop bet with me because he thinks he's got me killed with his team.
Who's on Daniel's list?
He picked Phil Ivey to start with.
Now, I'm surprised at that because, again, I was saying you want to pick players who play a lot of events. Phil does not play a lot of events. He won't be playing the $1,500 and $2,500 events, will he?
Probably not. That's why I'm a little surprised at that, too. But, I mean, he has such confidence that he'll go deep in the ones he does play, and there is a reward. You double the points anytime you have an event that's over 10,000 entry. And Phil will play most of the 10,000 events.
That's true. Where on Daniel's list is Daniel? Are you allowed to pick yourself?
Well, you may have been able to, but Gavin Smith got the first pick. And the first fifth was Daniel Negreanu.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Daniel was second pick, and he was already gone.
Let me tell you a couple of people that I would put on my list.
Okay.
Like come up with like five here off the top of my head.
All right.
Alan Cunningham.
Third pick.
Alan is always Norman Chad's favorite in these things. He just likes saying Alan Cunningham over and over and over again. Alan goes deep in a lot of these tournaments.
Yeah, I would love to have Alan. If he had been available at the end of the first round, we'd have picked him.
Okay. I would normally pick Phil Ivey, except I have to cross him off the list because he doesn't play enough events.
Yeah, I understand that.
I'm going to go with E-Dog, Eric Lindgren.
Eric is a tough one. Yeah, absolutely. Where was he? Because he was up here fairly.
Came in third in the horse event last year.
Went in the middle of the second round.
Okay. This is a guy who, I he can do great or he can do horribly. In the last few years, he's been doing great. Mike Mattisau would be on my list.
He's high on my list, too. The problem is he's almost always known for the Texas Hold'em, the No Limits. He plays the others, but he doesn't, frankly, place very well in them. On a Raz, on a Mixed Games, he doesn't place in there as well.
Okay.
Mike is up there, but Mike wouldn't be probably in my top 10.
All right. Gus Hansen I would probably put on my list. Gus is probably going to play a lot of events.
Gus is probably not going to play a whole lot of events.
Uh-oh.
He doesn't typically.
Whoops.
So, yeah, you have a right idea, solid player, good one to have, but he will not play very many events.
All right, and what about a guy who's got a great online reputation now and getting a great live game reputation as well, Sean Deeb?
Yeah, Sean Deeb, absolutely. I mean, he's on here. He went first one chosen in the third round.
Okay.
Right up there, very high.
All right, well, those would be my five fantasy picks for the World Series of Poker, which gets underway tomorrow, and Dennis will be out there for the 40K event starting on Thursday. By the way, this year's sponsor is not Milwaukee's Best Light Beer. I think they're still involved in it.
Yes,
but
they are.
The presenting sponsor this year, and we'll see all the banners and signs, and, and ESPN will be saying this over and over again. I can't wait till Norman Chad gets to mention Jack Link's Beef Jerky. That's the new sponsor, Jack Link's Beef Jerky.
It's going to be 250 media people out there, different outlets, all of them trying to figure out how they can say that without laughing the first time.
Their saying on their website is, in poker, the saying is, all you need is a chip and a chair. Our new saying is, all you need is a stack and some jack. And that'll be the last word before we both go out to the World Series of Poker. All three of us, in fact. Dennis is leaving tomorrow. He'll be representing PokerStars there, and we're happy to have PokerStars as a sponsor of this show every week. Joe McGowan, the poker coach, and I will both get out there Friday night. So next week you'll hear this show as we do it live from the Rio in Las Vegas.